You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You're listening to Cheese and Packers, a project powered by the Packernet Podcast Network. I'm your host, J.J. Leahy. Happy to be with you today. Follow me on Twitter, at J.J. Leahy, that's L-A-H-E-Y, to stay up to date with all things Packers or to ask me questions. I like just chatting with Packer fans in general. We got some news. Got a couple of research projects, I guess, that we're going to get into. We're just going to talk some Packers football. And first off, we're going to start off with a question that I got, and I forget who asked me this now because it's been a little while. So I apologize. I don't even know how I would go about looking up who sent this to me. Anyways, the question was, so the Bears trade away like all their picks all the time. And the question was, how good are those players that end up getting drafted with those original Bears picks that they trade away? Thought that was a fun question. Like, okay, who did they miss out on? Without looking it up, my assumption was this was going to be juicy. There was going to be some dudes in here that just make you kind of cackle. Bears traded away the pick that was eventually spent on this player, and they took this player. Now, here's the wonderful thing. ProFootballReference.com tracks all of this for us. They make it super easy. So I'm honestly just going to read a lot of this out loud because I can. All right. So we're going to start in 2021 and move backwards. On draft day, they traded 2021 first round pick, 20th overall, which was later used on Kadarius Toney. A 2021 fifth round pick, number 164th overall, subsequently traded to who? Somebody else. And by the way, one of the issues with looking at the really recent trades is that there's going to be guys that you're like, I have no idea who that is because they were a rookie last year and didn't get to play. You have no idea if these dudes are even any good. But this was defensive back Jamar Johnson. He was drafted by the Broncos. So then you have 2022 first round pick, 7th overall, spent on Evan Neal. And 2022 fourth round pick, number 112 overall, for Daniel Bellinger, who is a tight end who was drafted by the Giants. They gave away all that. So Kadarius Toney, Jamar Johnson, Evan Neal, and Daniel Bellinger for Justin Fields. The following day, they traded 2021 second round pick, number 52 overall, which was subsequently traded to the Browns, with which they drafted linebacker Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who had a fantastic rookie season. 2021 third round pick, number 83 overall, Tommy Tremble, tight end that I really, really, really liked. He got drafted by the Panthers. Panthers had a garbage offense last year. Tremble didn't do anything, but I really liked him. And, man, I mean, if you could trade for Tremble today for a third-round pick, I would do it in a heartbeat. Just saying. But anyways. And 2021 sixth-round pick, number 204 overall, wide receiver Shai Smith. A lot of you should remember his name from draft coverage last year. And that was all spent to acquire Tevin Jenkins. 2021 second round pick, number 39 overall. And they also got a fifth round pick last year, which they spent on Larry Borum, who is, what is, he's a guard, isn't he? 90% certain he plays guard for the Bears, or did last year. I'm not sure what he's doing this year. He played 10 games last year, started 8 games. Curious off the top. Let's see. Larry Borum, what was his grade last year? So PFF has him listed as a tackle. He had a 61 grade last year. And then Tevin Jenkins, of course, had a horrific rookie season. So in the fifth round, you got Borum, who had a 61. In the second round, you got Tevin Jenkins, who had a 47.5 PFF grade. Good Lord. Allowed 2 sacks, committed 7 penalties. He only played 160 snaps. How do you have 9 horrific plays out of 160 snaps? That sucks. this exercise is already more fun than I thought it was going to be. I mean, we're still in 2021. Let's see. Then on May 1st, they traded. How does this work? Oh, this is the following day. It threw me off because it was May. So we got 3 days in a row, April 29, 30, and May 1st. So this is day 3 of the draft. They traded a 6th round pick, which was drafted, or they traded that to the Seahawks, who took Stone Forsythe. And you can kind of just pencil in anything that the Seahawks ever do in the draft is going to stink. Stone Forsythe is a tackle. So, you know, you got the Bears trading picks to the Seahawks. I think that instantly these picks get less valuable because although I think that Ryan Pace was kind of garbage at most of his job, evaluating talent in the draft and actually finding good players, he was decent at. He was crap at getting good value for those players. He was constantly giving picks away and moving up and moving up and moving up. Made terrible free agency moves. Anyway, so I don't need to rehash that. He's not even there anymore. So they traded. Really, they moved back 11 picks in the 6th round and picked up a 7th round pick for their trouble. So they took Khalil Herbert, who was good last year, at least in the small sample size. I'm just curious. Yeah, he's still with the Bears. Why did I think he left? There was a different running back they had who left this offseason. And then 2021 7th round pick, number 250 overall, which they spent on, how I don't know how you pronounce his name, Carisis Tonga, I think is how you say his name. And Tonga is a defensive tackle, still with the Bears. Okay. Then on July 26th, they didn't give up. And they traded Anthony Miller and did a pick swap. They picked up. There's so many more trades that happened. So like they traded Anthony Miller and a 7th round pick to the Texans. That 7th round pick got traded at least once, but I think more than once because it somehow ended up. Hang on, wait a minute, Tariq. What's the guy's name that we drafted? Yeah, Tariq Carpenter. Yeah. So this Bears pick ended up in our hands somehow. That's what I thought. I know the Texans drafted a Tariq as well. At least I think they did. There was another Tariq who was way higher in the draft. Anyways, I thought he went to the Texans, but maybe he didn't. But then what they got in exchange was a 2022 fifth round pick that they eventually traded away to... the Bills. The wording on some of this stuff is really confusing. Sorry about that. But that ended up being wide receiver Khalil Shakir. And then October 5th, they traded a 6th round pick. Oh, it's a 2023 6th round pick, so we have no idea yet. Okay. Overall, I would say in 2021... the Bears significantly lost out in value. The trades that they made did not benefit them. So to speed things up a little bit, this time I'm just going to list the players that they got and the players they gave up. 2020 gave away a fourth round pick used on Shaquille Quarterman for Nick Foles. Gave away another fourth round pick used on Cam Bynum to the Vikings. For a fifth round pick. How does that work? What? Traded fourth round pick to Vikings for fifth round pick. Oh, it's a different year. That's why. They traded 2021 fourth rounder for a 2020 fifth rounder, and they used it on Trevis Gibson. Trevis Gibson! Oh my gosh. Would you rather have Cam Bynum or Trevis Gibson? I mean, I know they're young players. I know they're young players, and their career could wildly change going forward, but my lord. Let's see. They traded a sixth round pick used on Sean Bradley, a sixth round pick used on Quez Watkins, and a seventh round pick used on Casey Tuhill for a fifth round pick used on Darnell Mooney, and a seventh round pick used on Lakavius Simmons. I think Bears fans would be okay with that trade right now. And then they traded tight end Adam Shaheen to the Dolphins for the pick that was eventually traded to the Seahawks for Stone Forsythe. So 2020, I would say you lost a few decent fourth round picks here. And for all your trouble, you did manage to give up a 2 sixth and a seventh for basically Darnell Mooney. I think the Bears fans are okay with that, especially compared to their other trades. I mean, that looks brilliant compared to their other trades. So I just flipped back to 2019, and I immediately notice they traded Jordan Howard to the Eagles for a sixth-round pick that was eventually traded as part of that big Darnell Mooney trade. So you gave up, you know, the picks that you had plus Jordan Howard for Darnell Mooney. Again, Bears fans love Darnell Mooney. I think they are still okay with that trade, but just throwing that out there. They traded a third-round pick, eventually used to draft Damian Harris to the Patriots, of course. Close to these tabs. I've got like 40 open tabs now because I keep opening all these transactions. They traded the Damian Harris pick for... every one of these trades, it says, you know, traded this for this, subsequently traded, and then, you know, some other player. So, like, they do all these trades and get future picks, but then they trade those future picks away. So all you see is, like, who, you know, you gave up this guy, and in exchange, somebody else got to draft this guy, and you got to draft this guy. And it just makes it more and more disappointing the further down you get. And 2020 fourth round pick subsequently traded to the Jets to draft James Morgan, that quarterback out of Green Bay High School, to the Patriots for a third round pick used on David Montgomery and a sixth round pick used on Duke Shelley. So overall, you give up a third, a fifth, and a next year's fourth, and you get a slightly earlier third and a much later. Well, I mean, you're turning the fifth and the fourth into a sixth, and you're moving up slightly in the third. So the only good news there is that you did use that to draft David Montgomery. You also drafted Duke Shelley. I cannot remember off the top of my head if Duke Shelley is a good football player or not. Let's see what PFF says. Duke Shelley, cornerback. Bad. Now, his overall grade is just a 53, so that's not horrific, but first thing that jumped out at me was his run defense was 35. I mean, he's a cornerback, so if you're going to be sucky at one thing, I'd rather you be sucky at run defense, but coverage grade 58.2. Allowed 35 receptions last year on 46 targets. That's horrific, but he's been in the league a couple years now. What was he before that? He got worse from 2020 to 2021. What did he do in his rookie year? Yeah, he's gotten worse all 3 years he's been in the league. Now, in 2019, he only had one target. He barely played at all. So, yeah, he only had five coverage snaps. He had one target and zero receptions. So, you know, fine for his rookie season, I guess. But then the more playing time they give him, because his snap counts jump up drastically every year, and the more snaps you give him, the worse he plays. So, love to see that when I'm looking at the Bears. And then there's another. Every time you look through here, also you see a bunch of Packers in here. Like they don't do deals with the Packers, but May 6, 2019, traded 2021 seventh round pick, subsequently traded to the Cardinals to draft Michael Manet, who now is a Green Bay Packer, to the Raiders for kicker Eddie Pinheiro.
Well, that worked out pretty well.
He's not their kicker anymore. 2 years later, actually not even 2 years later, 1 year later, their kicker was Cairo Santos. So, I mean, I'm not saying you gave up a lot in this trade where you're throwing away a seventh round pick, got used on Michael Manet, who got cut by the Cardinals and it was signed as a free agent by the Packers. I mean, you didn't lose much. I'm just saying you didn't get much either. They do these deals and it doesn't benefit them. 2018, I think this is I guess we'll go back as far as 2017. 2018, traded a fourth rounder, eventually traded away. This is the thing. They always get traded away again. Eventually traded, used to draft Antonio Callaway and a 2019 second round pick. Subsequently traded, drafted Mecole Hardman. They gave all that to the Patriots for a 2018 second round pick. So what they did is they used a fourth round pick to move up. Wow. To move up five spots in the second round. That's brutal. For comparison, the Packers gave up a fourth round pick, and how many spots did they move up in the first round? Like five, something like that, to draft Jordan Love. They moved up five spots in the second round for a fourth round pick, and then they used that to draft Anthony Miller, who is no longer with the team. He was traded to the Texans. Texans cut him, if I remember correctly. I'm not going to look it up because I don't really care about the Texans. And in September, they traded their first round pick, eventually used to draft Josh Jacobs, their sixth round pick, eventually used to draft Blesson Austin. I guess he didn't pan out. And a 2020 first round pick. So two first round picks. You got a 2020 third round pick in here, 2020 second round pick, 2020 seventh round pick, a 2019 sixth round pick. And all of that netted you. Where is this? Oh, no, they got a second round pick back. So they gave up two firsts, a third, and a sixth. They got Khalil Mack, Cole Kmet, the Cole Kmet draft pick anyways, and a seventh rounder. I'm fine with that trade. It's okay. It's fine. I mean, it didn't, you know, Khalil Mack is no longer with the team, and you got, like, what? Hang on a second. Let me look at this. What did they get in compensation for? Because the whole issue with the Khalil Mack trade was, like, you're giving up all this capital, and you have to pay him a crap ton of money. They ended up having to move on from him because they couldn't afford all that money. They got a second rounder and a sixth rounder for Khalil Mack. They used that second rounder to draft Jaquan Brisker. Let's see. Also in 2018, they traded DeAndre Hall to the Eagles for a seventh round pick that they used to draft Kareth White, who did not pan out. He ended up spending some time with the Packers. He is no longer with the Packers. 2017, this is the last year we're going to do. And you know why we're doing 2017, because draft day traded 2017 first round pick, 2017 third round pick, 2017 fourth round pick, and 2018 third round pick. To move up one spot and draft Mitch Trubisky. So here's the players that they gave up. This is brutal. Oh my goodness, this is brutal. So first of all, the guy who was taken with the pick that they would have had they not traded up is Solomon Thomas. Solomon Thomas, now with the New York Jets. He was drafted by the 49ers. Horrific player. His grades are disgusting. Terrible player. So, you know, for all the Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson, whatever, you could have had Solomon Thomas. But that's not where the trade ends. That third round pick was eventually traded to the Saints. They drafted Alvin Kamara. That fourth round pick was traded to who? They drafted Seahawks drafted Tedrick Thompson. Not a good player. But their 2018 third round pick stayed with the Niners, and they drafted Fred Warner. So, you know, Solomon Thomas, number three overall pick, Tedrick Thompson, fourth rounder. Yeah, meh. But you lost out on Alvin Kamara and Fred Warner for Mitchell Trubisky. Oh, I love it. The following day, traded 2017 second round pick to the Cardinals, who drafted Budda Baker with it. For a second round pick, they moved back and they drafted Adam Shaheen, who they traded to the Dolphins like a year or two later. I think 1 year later for like peanuts. 2017 fourth round pick, they drafted Tariq Cohen. I love Tariq Cohen, however, hasn't played in 2 years. Definitely a bummer. I really, really, really like Tariq, but you can't argue they really got great value out of this. 2017 sixth round pick, eventually traded to, who the heck is Jeremy Clark? Jeremy Clark is a cornerback for, what the heck team is this? Looks like he was drafted by the Jets, but I can't tell who he plays for now. And then they also, here we go, 2017, they drafted a fourth round pick, eventually spent on Josh Reynolds, wide receiver, and sixth round pick, oh yeah, this is the Jeremy Clark thing I just looked at. This is why. That's why I was confused. So they gave away the Budda Baker pick, and in exchange, they got the Adam Shaheen pick and the Tariq Cohen pick, and they got the Jeremy Clark pick. Well, the next day, they traded away the Jeremy Clark pick and the Josh Reynolds pick to the Rams to move up five spots in the fourth round and select Eddie Jackson, who had one good year. And then they traded a pick to the Chargers, and Pro Football Reference doesn't say what pick that was, for Dontrell Inman. So, you got like two good trades here total out of the last few years. But that, man, this is a pile of good players you missed out on. Just in 2017 alone, Alvin Kamara, Budda Baker, Fred Warner, Josh Reynolds is not terrible. And a bunch of other scrubs. And in exchange, you got back Mitchell Trubisky, Adam Shaheen, Tariq Cohen, and Eddie Jackson. That's what you got in the 2017 draft. That is brutal. So, all right, that was fun. I'm going to take a quick break here, and then I have another topic I want to hit. But, again, sorry to whoever asked the question because I forgot who it was, but... yeah, that is what happened with the Bears picks that they've traded away. And it's going to be even more fun to watch how the 2022 trades pan out in the future when we can kind of see whether these players are any good. Just for perspective, so they gave up Khalil Mack and they got in return Jaquan Brisker and a 2023 sixth round pick. They gave away Khalil Shakur, Thomas Booker, Tyson Anderson, and Elijah Hicks. And they were able to pick up Braxton Jones, Treston Ebner, Doug Kramer, Dominique Robinson, Jatir Carter, and Trenton Gill. No, it looks like they got Elijah Hicks, actually. So they gave away a sixth round pick to the Chargers, and then they drafted Elijah Hicks and Trenton Gill out of that. So we'll have to see, because a lot of these are future picks as well, or I guess only just one of them is a future pick. Two future picks and a bunch of rookies that we have to see how they pan out. But we'll take a quick ad break and I'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Okay. Patreon.com/JJ Leahy if you want to support the show. Help me continue to get cool subscriptions to various sites that will give me better information, get better studio equipment, that kind of stuff that I really want to do. Or if you just like the show and like what I do. Also, make sure you check out No Huddle Radio over on PackersTalk.com. That's the other podcast I do. So I do Wednesday and Thursday every week. This show and No Huddle. So if you haven't checked out No Huddle yet, give that a listen. Here is the topic we're going to dive into today. I want to start a conversation about what is the new identity of the Packers. For example, do you know what schemes we run offensively and defensively? I asked Coach Hahn how he would describe the schemes we run, or rather just what labels he would slap on each one. Because, like I said to Coach, I said, I would say that we run a wide zone offense, and we just colloquially call the offense the Shanahan scheme and call the defense the Fangio scheme. Always wondered, what's the name of the Fangio scheme? What does he run? Is it Tampa 2? We know that Joe Barry has, roots in the Tampa scheme. Coach said I would call it a wide zone spread offense. And for defense, we're just going to call it the 3-4 Fangio. I like it. This is it. 3-4 Fangio. So I'm not really going to talk a lot about the offense today. I am going to dive into a bit of the defense and what the Fangio defense slash the Joe Barry defense really is about. Because I think we're going to see in 2022 on the offensive side of the ball, I think we're going to see another step in the direction of the pure LaFleur offense. And what that is, which is an offshoot of the Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan offense, I should say. And there's several teams in the league that run the Mike Shanahan offense. They all have their own flavors. You got, obviously, Kyle Shanahan in San Francisco, Sean McVay in L.A., you got Mike Vrabel in Tennessee, Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. Wow. Out of all the words that I should struggle to remember, that's probably not the best one. to a much lesser extent, you know, you have other disciples of the tree. So if you're thinking about the Mike Shanahan coaching tree, the top guys who learn from him, his top disciples, really, I think if you were to build out the tree, you'd have a Matt LaFleur branch, you'd have a Kyle Shanahan branch, you'd have a Sean McVay branch, and you could argue that Matt LaFleur maybe belongs underneath the Kyle Shanahan tree, and I would not complain if you did that, but I think we can separate it out a little bit because Matt did coach for Mike, as did Sean and Kyle. Anthony Lynn coached for Shanahan. The Lynn doesn't have any more branches off of his branch. There's no twigs coming off the Anthony Lynn branch. Obviously, you have Gary Kubiak. Gary Kubiak coached up Kevin Stefanski, now the head coach of the Browns. He coached up his son, Clint Kubiak, who is still running the offense there in Minnesota. And then the much less talked about Art Schell branch, which has Bill Callahan, Tom Walsh, and Mark Trestman. That's much older news. But if you're looking at the new modern branches, you got the Gary Kubiak branch, which is, I would say, the most different out of the, you know, if you got Gary Kubiak, Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, Matt LaFleur, Kubiak is the most different. But the Vikings and Browns are still disciples of the Shanahan offense. Sean McVay obviously mentored Zach Taylor, and Zach Taylor's offense, I would say, doesn't share a lot of similarities with the Shanahan offense, but still inclusive in here. Kyle Shanahan obviously discipled Robert Saleh, Mike McDaniel, the Dolphins' new head coach, and Mike LaFleur, Matt's brother. And again, with Matt LaFleur, you could put him under Sean McVay. You could put him under Kyle Shanahan because he did coach for both of those guys, first in Atlanta with Kyle and then L.A. with Sean. But he wasn't at either place for a super long time, and he did get to learn directly from Mike. And Matt has his own coaching tree now already at this point. Arthur Smith worked under Matt LaFleur in Tennessee. The offense kept going in Tennessee after Matt left, and as is typical with the Shanahan offense, which takes a while to develop and really blossom, it took a year with Tennessee. In fact, Matt was no longer there when it really took hold with Arthur. Now Arthur is the head coach of the Falcons. Their offense last year was horrific. I would maybe expect, you know, if you're just looking at how everybody, all the other teams fared, you would expect the Falcons to take a step forward on offense this year. We'll see. They, you know, just lost their quarterback. I think that if you look at all the turmoil they have going on in Atlanta, maybe a lot of reasons to not expect it to take a step forward. And then obviously you have Nathaniel Hackett and Luke Getsy under the LaFleur tree as well. And so I do want to talk about the offense, but probably not today. But all these different offshoots of the Shanahan offense have their own flavors. The Rams offense has a lot of differences with the Packers. And I think you would probably expect, although the Packers were maybe the most similar to maybe a blend of like the Rams and the Titans over the last 2 years, I think maybe you would have an expectation that this year the team is going to overall much more closely resemble the 49ers. That is a statement that I'm making that is true about the offense. Also true about the defense from a personnel standpoint. You look at the Rams, the Niners, the Buccaneers, and let's throw the Chargers on there. I'm trying to think who else has just really viciously whipped us over the last couple of years. The Saints. And you get these defenses that have just a stacked front seven. Wicked pass rushers, huge defensive tackles, hyper-athletic linebackers. Think Fred Warner. The heck is the guy's name? Devin White, but what's the guy's name next to him? Buccaneers, linebackers. I can only think of Devin Smith, or Devin Lloyd and N'Kobe Dean when I try and think of this dude's name. Lavonte David. There we go. I don't know why. I mean, Nakobe and Levante, Nakobe Dean, Levante David. I mean, it's similar. And then Devin White, Devin Lloyd. I just struggle every time I try and think of Levante David's name. But these defenses, these brutal front seven, have just walloped us the last few years. And it's quite clear looking at the last couple draft classes, looking at how they have rebuilt this defense up with Devondre Campbell and Quay Walker, and you got TJ Slayton and Devontae Wyatt and Kenny Clark, and you got the edge rushers are maybe a little bit less of a focal point, but you still got, you know, in Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary, you have top 10 or, you know, at least top 15 pass rushers that you really like. It's going to be a really versatile defense. And that defense is shares some similarities with what they're doing in L.A., shares some similarities with what they did in Tampa and San Francisco. But they're copying the Fangio defense. The Rams, the Chargers, even the Bears, although I think that they just don't have the talent anywhere to really execute anymore, are copying the Fangio defense. And it'll be interesting to see where Fangio ends up because he's not in the league. He coached the Broncos last year, has not accepted a new job anywhere yet. I don't know if he has interviewed or been offered any jobs. I didn't keep up with that. But Brandon Staley ran the defense in LA for the Rams. Now he's with the Chargers. Chargers have great defensive players along the defensive line. Linebackers are pretty suspect. I think they're going to need to bolster the linebacker room. And by the way, it makes sense that when the guy off of that Rams coaching staff, who was a Fangio disciple, Joe Barry, when the guy that we stole what happened to be the linebackers coach, it just wasn't that surprising that he came to Green Bay and we immediately started prioritizing linebackers. It's related, clearly. I mean, Green Bay never cared about linebackers, ever. And now we not only have one linebacker here that we drafted with our first overall pick in 2022, we also have the guy that we just paid a boatload of money to. Both these guys are excellent tacklers, freak alien athletes. And we know that bringing in Joe Barry to Green Bay was all about bringing the Fangio defensive system to Green Bay. Well, let's talk about what the defense actually does. What's the biggest thing that separates the Fangio defense? Here's a quote from Chris Harris Jr., a cornerback who played for Fangio in Denver and ended up leaving Denver, got signed by the Chargers, who have Brandon Staley, another Fangio guy. He says, it's a versatile defense. Fangio has a wide variety of defenses, and it takes a while to get adjusted. You have to be smart to know how to play your spot, play your zone, play your position. I think that's why I like it. It has so much. It has a lot of different looks that we can bring. Let's talk about those different looks. Highlight a game from 2018, which of course was when the Bears defense was otherworldly. This would be one of the very last times that Fangio ever coached with the Bears, because he would go on to get a job as the head coach of the Broncos. 2018, in December, the Bears played the Rams. Now, if you rewind back to early December 2018, the Rams and the Chiefs were seemingly unstoppable that year. Sean McVay's offense was unstoppable, was on fire. Patrick Mahomes was breaking out. Jared Goff looked like he was the other shining new star in the NFL. Of course, that season had to end in another Tom Brady win in the Super Bowl, like always happens. But The Rams were something else until they came to Chicago. So the Rams at that point were 11-1. They had scored at least 30 points in 10 of the 12 games they had played at that point. In fact, they were scoring an average of 34.9 points per game. That's wild. They had already had that shootout with the Chiefs, which the final score was, both teams got into the 50s. It was like 55 to 53, something like that, 54 to 51, something like that, with the Chiefs. I believe the third highest scoring game in NFL history. Super fun offense to watch. But week 13 comes up. The Rams march into a frigid Soldier Field, and all of a sudden, Sean McVay's offense meets an immovable object. Vic Fangio was prepared. He had every type of defensive player he needed to put any defensive look on the field. He held the Bears to 2 field goals and 214 total yards. And of course, the Bears' anemic offense was able to put up more than 6 points. They won 15-6. That's just incredible. Like you're highlighting, yeah, and this was how good the Bears' defense was at their peak. They held the Sean McVay offense in its heyday to 6 points. Yeah, what did the offense do? Well, I mean, the offense only scored 15 points. That's the Bears for you. How did they do it? Well, one of the things that Fangio did that day was he brought a safety down into the box on the line of scrimmage, actually. Presented a 6-1 front. It had 6 players along the defensive line, 1 middle linebacker. And that completely neutralized the weak side running game that McVay had been running rampant across the league with all season long. He had no answer. There was nothing he could do. Todd Gurley couldn't do jack. He had 28 yards on 11 carries. Now, you would say, why don't you just start throwing the ball? Well, they tried that. And what Fangio did was he's still putting out a 6-1 front, as far as I can tell. You got 6 guys on the defensive line pre-snap. But it's disguised. And as soon as they snap the ball, they shift into their standard 3-4 base defense. And you got 3 receivers out there. And you got 4 DBs covering them up. Got 2 linebackers there all of a sudden who are covering up the middle of the field. Taking away those intermediate routes, the short crossing routes. There's nothing that they could do. Because they weren't prepared. They couldn't tell, based on how Fangio was disguising his coverages pre-snap, to what was going to happen. Goff had 4 interceptions, was sacked 3 times, 0 touchdowns. And what was the result of that game? First of all, you laid out a blueprint that 2 other teams were able to copy to shut down the Rams. One was the Lions with Matt Patricia, a Belichick disciple. Second was the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And we know that Belichick was really studying what the Lions and Bears had done against the Rams. I think it's pretty easy to intimate that the Bears' loss really was a death knell for the Rams' Super Bowl hopes. Now, what they could have done is learn from it. But I think one of the issues is that the McVay offense was very quarterback friendly. And you didn't have a quarterback in Goff who could still flourish once the scheme is being beaten by the defense. And you actually need a guy who can think on the fly and still react to those dramatic shifts in defensive coverage. But the other effect was that McVay ended up hiring Brandon Staley, who was a Fangio disciple, to come in and run his defense after that. Staley obviously then mentored Joe Barry. Staley got a job off of his performance as the Rams defensive coordinator to go become the Chargers head coach. And Joe Barry obviously moves on to Green Bay. Now, Fangio seems uniquely gifted at destroying the Shanahan offense. Because Fangio's been around for a long time prior to being with the Bears in 17-18. In 2011 and in 2013, Shanahan was a coordinator with the Niners, and he played against the Washington Redskins, who were featuring a young RG3. Previously, he was the Offensive Rookie of the Year. He had just 118 yards. He was sacked 6 times. Of course, McVay and LaFleur were both there, as well as Kyle Shanahan, and Mike Shanahan was the head coach. First time, San Francisco won 19-11. Second time, they won 27-6. And I got a lot of quotes here from Mike Shanahan on Vic Fangio as a defensive coordinator, but here's a little more interesting one to me from Wade Phillips. He said, Vic's done a great job everywhere he's been, obviously, defensively. Everything's complicated because offenses are so complicated. You have to make so many adjustments. But his defense is pretty complicated. Most of the time, it's not the system, it's what they do with it and the players they have. But Vic's been successful as a defensive coordinator at different places, so you know what he's done, not only his defense, but the people that he's had. All right, we've talked about what this style of defense has accomplished and what some of its strengths are. What do they actually do? Well, for starters, they kind of don't really blitz very much. That's been true of Fangio's defenses. That was also true last year of the Packers. The Packers blitzed on 21.3% of their plays. If you had to guess, is that a high number or a low number? Here are the teams who blitz fewer times than the Packers. The Bengals, Colts, Titans, 49ers, Texans, Eagles, and Raiders. That's it. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers had the highest blitz rate at 40.8%, twice as many times. Or twice as big of a percentage of time, anyways. So they don't blitz very often. When they do blitz, it's very intentional. Mike Shanahan pointed this out. He said, when Fangio blitzes, he blitzes for a reason. We talk about the importance of that front seven being so lethal. Now, it starts with your defensive tackles. They play heavy on their blocks. They take on blockers head on. They believe in having your defensive tackles be the guys to shut down the running game. This has been effective for a long time. You got to have the right guys to do it, though. You think back to what the 2019 defense looked, how the struggles that they had taking on the run. One of the effects of this, of really asking your tackles to be the ones to shut down the running game, frees up your linebackers a lot. Coach Hahn talked last year about leaving your defensive line unprotected by your linebackers. Frees them up to just go make plays. This is what Devondre Campbell talks about in that he loves, that the Packers just let him go be a linebacker, he says. He wants to be a traditional Mike linebacker, just see ball, get ball. It's also a very cornerback-friendly scheme. They play a ton of zone. They don't do a lot of press man, ever. Even though I think in the last day or two, Ryan was talking about, Eric Stokes, I think, is like one of the best players in football at press man, something like that. The Fangio's defensive scheme just doesn't press man very often. It's almost all zone. And what that leads to is more turnovers. And you see that across a lot of teams. When the Bears were at their best in 2018, they had 36 turnovers. When Fangio left and went to Denver, you saw Justin Simmons was able to take advantage of that and start coming up with the ball a lot as well. Fangio's well known for changing the look of the defense post-snap. For example, in Denver, he was frequently sending safeties up, rushing out of their safety position to go double a receiver who was originally just covered by one cornerback. Happened a lot in Denver. Now, one staple of the Fangio defense that's not going to jive with what your eyeballs saw last year from Joe Barry's is that the Fangio defense traditionally is elite in the red zone. And even with the Broncos, when the Broncos defense was really struggling a lot, they actually led the league in red zone defense in both seasons that Fangio was the head coach there. They limited touchdowns to just 43.9% of all red zone trips across those 2 years. So you get the ball inside the 20-yard line, you were only going to get a touchdown 43.9% of the time. That was league best, and they did that back-to-back years. What is the reason why that is traditionally the case with Fangio defense? Well, when you're in the red zone, Fangio almost always keeps two inside linebackers on the field. Most defenses will take an inside linebacker off the field and go into a nickel situation. They'll put in a third safety, a fourth cornerback, whatever. Fangio really strongly believes in having two inside backers when you're in the red zone. Why? He believes it provides a greater defensive flexibility. He can mix and match his pressures and coverages, having those two linebackers. And really, he's got four linebackers because you got your outside backers. And when you're in the red zone, he's utilizing them in a multiple variety of ways. And he believes that you're going to have better tackling when you have more linebackers. Bigger linebackers should be able to tackle better than a safety or a cornerback. And when you are in the red zone, every inch matters. And we saw Chris Barnes last year had, I think, two different games where he saved a touchdown by bringing a guy down, I mean, just like inches or a foot short of the goal line. Or one time he forced a guy out of bounds there. And that ends up, you know, saving the drive because then they're able to make another stop on the next play or in the one case that was a third down. So that's the reason that his defense is so good in the red zone. Makes a lot of sense. Looking back, Packers struggled in the red zone in 2021. They really only had one linebacker that they really could depend on. You don't hate Chris Barnes, but he's not on the same level as Devondre Campbell. So you have Joe Barry pounding the table, talking to Goody and saying, get me another linebacker. Thank you for Devondre. Get me another one. I need two. I can't do my job with only one linebacker. You have to get me a second one. Makes sense. If you're Brian Gutekunst and you're trying to think what is the biggest needle mover that I can get for this team, is it getting an elite wide receiver so that Aaron has more places to go with the football, more dependable targets? Well, if my defensive coordinator is telling me I can go from being a not good red zone defense to a very good red zone defense and limit to a huge factor the number of touchdowns that opposing teams are scoring just by adding this one guy, that math makes a lot of sense. You can see why adding Quay Walker, if you believe that he is the right player to do what Joe Barry needs, which makes sense since all the scouting reports on Quay Walker hammer home how, yeah, man, he's just a clone of Devondre Campbell, and you look at what a great tackler he is. The massive size, that was the big separator between him and N'Kobe Dean, his teammate. Everybody says, well, N'Kobe Dean is the better player. Granted, there was a little bit of an injury with N'Kobe. I would be surprised if the injury was really the reason why the Packers didn't go for him. But the massive difference between these two is size. N'Kobe Dean, 5'11", 229 pounds. Quay Walker, 6'4", 241. Not even close. 5-inch difference in height. If you want a big linebacker, there was no way you're going to be considering N'Kobe Dean over Quay Walker. Well, what about Devin Lloyd? Devin Lloyd, 6'3", 237 pounds, nearly the same size as Quay, just 1 inch shorter. And actually, Leo Chenal, also 1 inch shorter than Quay, and 9 pounds heavier, 6'3", 250. Well, what is the other thing that separates Quay? Quay had the best tackle grade of anybody in the draft at linebacker. He had the fewest missed tackles at 4.3%. For comparison, Devin Lloyd was at 11.5. Where the heck is Leo Chenal? Here's Leo Chenal. He's 10.8. So they both were missing twice as many tackles as Quay Walker. Quay Walker's tackle grade was a 90.6. Chenal had an 85.9, which, you know, you like to see. That's certainly respectable. Devin Lloyd only a 75.1. Quay clearly stands out over Devin Lloyd. And if you're comparing Wisconsin to Georgia, Georgia's defense faced way stiffer competition. On paper, when you're comparing these guys, you don't have to come to the same conclusion and agree that Quay was the best pick. But you can clearly see how Gutekunst arrived at that conclusion himself. Then the 9.6 relative athletic score obviously didn't hurt anything either when you're deciding if you're going to go ahead and take this dude in the first round who your defensive coordinator is banging the table for. Just makes a lot of sense to me. I'm excited to see what they end up doing. So what it comes down to at the end of the day with the 2022 defense is there are two factors that are going to be really really crucial. The first is the talent of the players available. Well, we like the new guys that they added. Obviously, there's going to be a learning curve for Devontae Wyatt and Quay Walker. They're going to have to play some catch-up. But across the rest of the defense, it's all the guys who were the starters last year. And you can cry about losing Zadarius if you want to, but he didn't play last year, and they only missed him from a depth standpoint. They were fine without him as a starter. Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith held it down. The question last year was always about depth. You always wanted to give Rashawn and Preston a breather. You always wanted to feel better about the depth behind them because we were experiencing injuries at so many positions. You're like, we are one injury away from just sucking. So behind those two guys now this year, you got Kingsley Anagbar, you got Jonathan Garvin. Randy Ramsey is going to be coming back. I'm interested to see what he does. I've always liked Randy. We just have never really gotten to see him going up against starting caliber offensive players. He's been like a preseason stud every year, but the coaches like him a lot. You know, see what you're going to get from Tipa and Ladarius Hamilton. I think that depth at outside linebacker is still going to be a concern, but your starting talent, I think Rashawn and Preston are good enough. Kenny Clark, Dean Lowry, if he sticks around, Jerron Reed, Devontae Wyatt, TJ Slayton, you shouldn't have any problems with that defensive tackle group, despite the fact that you rotate through a lot of those guys every game. But how long is it going to take Devontae to get caught up? I mean, let's say that by like week 5, he's playing at a level where you feel really comfortable having him out there. You could have Kenny and let's say Dean Lowry out there and then rotate them for Devontae and Jerron Reed. That could really work. You got TJ Slayton as your fifth guy that you're rotating in and out of there. I think that you should be able to stop the run with just your defensive tackles. That should be something you can do. And when you're in, you know, when you are in goal line situation and you have to get a stop, you put Kenny and Devontae out there at the same time, or Kenny and whoever has been playing the best that, you know, at that point in the year. You should be able to get the stops you need with your defensive tackle group. That's something that we really couldn't say about our defensive tackle room since Mike Daniels was here. inside backer. Devondre and Quay, I think, should be enough to hold it down. And I think Quay should be able to make an impact early on this year. Why? Because the inside linebacker job in Joe Barry's scheme is an easy one. It's very friendly to these inside linebackers. They don't have a lot of complicated crap they have to learn and memorize. Safety, we got to see what happens. Cornerback, we already talked about how it's a cornerback-friendly scheme. Jair, Stokes, Rasul, Shamar, Nixon, Kabion, whoever's out there, they should have an easier time playing all this zone coverage than if they were asked to be playing man more often. And what this all brings us to is the guy making the play calls. How good is Joe Barry going to do at calling these plays in the right situations? Because that was what really set Vic Fangio apart, what really set Brandon Staley apart, is that they were able to diagnose how to confuse a Jared Goff. It's nice in theory to say, well, this is what we'd like to do. Can Joe Barry take the next step this year, continue to get better at doing that, at calling those plays? You need these guys disguising their plays pre and post snap. But I will say, I really think that the burden of the complications in this defense, you know, where is it hardest to play defense in Green Bay this year? I think it's going to be the defensive line. You're really asking your interior defenders to do a lot. Because if they're not doing their job, then the whole thing falls apart, because you have to ask your linebackers to come in and protect your defensive line. And it's got a snowball effect. And that is really where it could go off the rails. We'll get in, I think, maybe next week, unless something interesting comes up, we'll get into what the offense is going to look like this year, how we should expect that to change. I think that's going to be a fun conversation to have as well. And we also, you know, I guess I could have mentioned this earlier, we have a new cornerback. We flipped Rico Gafford over from wide receiver to cornerback, and I like that move a lot. I had less than 1% confidence in what Rico was going to do as a wide receiver. As a cornerback, which is actually what he has more experience doing, I think the Raiders are the ones. I think the Raiders are the ones who moved into wide receiver. Prior to that, he was a better cornerback than he's ever been a receiver. So, but it'll be interesting to see how this all pans out. We got a bunch of guys moving around from different rooms. So Tariq Carpenter, by the way, really interesting looking at the inside linebacker and safety rooms right now, because if Tariq Carpenter were a safety, this roster would make a lot more sense. Over the last 11 years, we have kept an average of 4.3 inside linebackers and 4.5 safeties on the initial 53-man roster. Well, we are currently sitting at 9 inside linebackers and just 6 safeties. If you move Tariq back over to the safety room, the numbers would make a lot more sense. I understand that that's not how you build a roster. You put Tariq in the inside linebacker room if that's where you actually want him to play. But I do just find it really interesting. Another thing that'll be interesting is how they list Tariq on the actual roster. Let me check and just see what the website says right now. Do they list him as a Packer? Obviously he's a Packer. Do they list him as a linebacker or a safety? And right now, he's even on this list. Safety. Tariq Carpenter is listed as a safety right now. Matt LaFleur is the one who said we're moving him to the linebacker room, but it'll be interesting. I think you're going to see also a blurring of the lines between linebacker and safety this year, which to an extent you saw last year. But last year you had more safeties playing linebacker, and I think this year you might have a situation where you have more linebackers playing safety. But anywho, I'm going to get out of here. Thank you so much for listening. Remember to check me out on Twitter at JJ Leahy, LAHEY. And please, if you enjoy my podcasts, Patreon.com/JJ Leahy, can financially support the show as well. If you don't like Patreon for some reason, shoot me a message, and I've got other apps as well that we could work with. But at the end of the day, I just super appreciate the messages that I get from everybody, sharing their thoughts on the episode, asking questions, suggesting future podcast topics. I'm always looking for new topics that you guys are interested in. You know, it's one thing for me to find a project that's interesting to me to dig into, but I really like hearing from you guys about what you want to hear. And it makes it easy too when I'm trying to put my schedule together. All right. Have a good one. I'll talk to you later. Yeah.